So the title of my talk is What About Human Health? Overlooking Public Health Effects of CAFOs in the Policy Debate to Restore the Chesapeake Bay. Is anyone in here not familiar with the term CAFO? Okay, that's good to know. So CAFO stands for Concentrated Animal Feeding Operation. Are you familiar with the terms factory farming, things like that? Okay, so we use the regulatory term, or we refer to it as industrial food animal production, because if operations are similar to CAFOs but don't meet the regulatory definition, they're still causing the same environmental health problems. So I'll use those two terms. And I'm glad people are here who are not familiar with CAFOs, because I can introduce you to this issue. I have no relationships to disclose. This is a picture of the Chesapeake Bay watershed. And there are very significant pollution issues in the Chesapeake Bay. There has been a renewed effort to restore the Chesapeake Bay. There is very degraded sea life, and there is a dead zone in the bay annually because of nutrient pollution that feeds algal blooms. And as the algal blooms decay, they take all of the oxygen out of the water. So then no sea life or plants can live in those sections of the water. So it's very significant ecological problems, but there's also public health problems involved, and that's what I focus on. And there are many pollution sources in the bay. They include agriculture, water treatment plants, urban runoff, and deposition of air pollution, and I'm going to focus on agriculture, specifically intensive animal agriculture. And the nutrients that the cleanup effort by the EPA and the state, the nutrients that they're mostly concerned about are nitrogen and phosphorus. So the biggest source of pollution is agriculture, and half of agriculture pollution comes from manure. So why is the Chesapeake Bay so overburdened with manure? This graphic shows us the total manure nitrogen in the Chesapeake Bay watershed counties, and as you can see, there are three areas where manure is so significantly concentrated because of the number of animals that are raised there in intensive settings, and this has very serious implications for environmental health for the rural populations that live in these areas. We've had very significant trends in the U.S. Concerning the ways that we raise animals for food, where we have transitioned to fewer, larger animal operations. And this, as I said before, this concentrates the waste in certain areas. So I just want to show you a couple pictures to give you an idea of what I'm talking about here. This is an aerial picture of a poultry operation in Maryland. This is on the very large side, but I wanted to give you an illustration. As you can see, it's right along a waterway. It's right along a river. And the capacity of this site is probably up to 600,000 chickens, and they're raised for they're raised for meat. They're called broilers. And then if you have egg production, they're called layers. But this is a broiler production. And you can just get an idea if you look at one of the houses, if you compare the size of one of the houses to one of these buildings, this is absolutely massive. What happens is the waste it then gets over-applied to the surrounding fields because they don't have enough cropland to apply all of the waste. And then this is just to illustrate what the inside of the building looks for broilers. This is just one of the buildings. As you saw, a lot of the sites have several buildings. And if this were egg layers, it would be rows of cages. So you might have seen pictures like that. So one of the environmental health problems with this food production system is air pollution. This is one way that the pollution gets into the air. There are many ways, but I just wanted to show you one picture to illustrate the issue. These are industrial-sized fans that clear out the houses so that the birds remain alive. If they didn't clear out the houses, they would die from the gases, like ammonia, from their waste. So this is getting a lot of dust into the air, a lot of particulate matter, pathogens. A lot of these animals are given antibiotics regularly in their feed, so then the pathogens that are in the waste are resistant to antibiotics. So when we're blowing this into the air, that's a huge environmental public health issue. This can lead to a whole host of respiratory issues. I'm not going to list them, but if anybody has specific questions about the environmental issues, the environmental public health issues, I'd be happy to talk about that later. And this is one way that the nutrients and the pathogens and the drugs and the drug residues get into the water. This is a manure spreader. The manure spreader would look different if it was hog waste, which there's also hogs and cattle in the Chesapeake Bay. This is the chicken waste. It's dry. So it's spread in this manner. And what happens is there is way too much waste, as I said, and it gets overspread on the fields because they have to get rid of the waste. And then if you have spread too much, when it rains, it all runs off and gets into the groundwater. There are nutrients, pathogens, heavy metals, including arsenic, that are fed to the chickens, drug residues. These are all in the water. And if you have nitrates in your water, that causes illness, including cancer. And also you can get infectious diseases from the pathogens in the water. And then there's an extra concern that the pathogens are resistant to antibiotics. So this is a picture from Frederick, Maryland, when there was a manure spill, and they had to have an advisory for people to boil their water because many rural people rely on private well water and not public water. So the other factors that make rural populations more susceptible to the problems caused by this method of food production include, in addition to the fact that they are more likely to rely on a private well, they have lower levels of income and educational attainment, healthcare provider shortages, and higher rates of chronic illness. So this is very important for rural health. So one section of my dissertation, I was concerned about the cleanup in the Chesapeake Bay, and what I noticed was the Chesapeake Bay effort, which is a partnership between the states and the EPA, was getting a lot of media attention. So that was very exciting. People are working on it. They're having public meetings, and there's lots of attention. But what I was curious about was how are they going to cover the public health issues that are related to the way that animals are raised in the watershed. And so one part of my dissertation was a media analysis to answer that question. So I took newspaper articles from ProQuest, and it was 4 years of articles. The reason why I wanted to The reason why I wanted to look at media coverage is because the way issues are covered in the media can impact how people think about them, who they think are to blame, whether it's poultry corporations or individuals who forget to boil their water or people who don't heed warnings when they go swimming in infected, polluted water. So the way that issues are covered in the media really can drive public opinion. So one thing that I want to have you keep in mind is that because there was so much media coverage on this issue, I had to do more of a qualitative analysis and not a quantitative analysis. I had to drill down into the articles and try to identify the articles that actually talk about agriculture and health. So this is not a media analysis where I covered all articles talking about the Chesapeake Bay and then said how health issues were covered, because if I took an overall sample, the numbers would be so low, which that's also a finding right there, that the numbers would be so low that I wouldn't be able to talk about how the issues are covered. I could only talk about how many articles talked about different things, and that wasn't really the goal of the research because the numbers are just so high. So I really wanted to drill down and say not how many articles cover it, but when it's in the articles, how is it covered? That's the important question. So we want to keep that in mind. These are some of the search terms that I used, and we just need to remember that the sample that I talk about is not a representative sample. It's a sample of articles that mention agriculture and mention health. So these are the results of the media analysis. I have the numbers up there, but I really want to talk about how the health issues were discussed in the articles. So only 40 articles. There's some overlap, so this adds up to more than 40 because some articles talked about more than one issue. There were only 40 articles out of 111 that I looked at that were relevant that talked about these issues. So that right there is a low number when I already took a purposeful sample of the media article. So it's really not covered very well. Recreation and swimming was the top issue that was covered, 16 mentioned the fact that we want to clean up the water so that people can swim in it. It usually wasn't very specific. Only 2 mentioned chicken production, which is a very large industry both in Virginia and Maryland and Delaware. The next most numerous issue talked about was drinking water, with 14, and half mentioned industrial food animal production. A general reference to human health is next, and they did not mention industrial food animal production at all. And then 8 articles mentioned antibiotics, and they all tied it to industrial food animal production, so that was interesting. In air quality, they also all tied it to industrial food animal production. They would talk about the ammonia gas and the dust that is introduced into the environment because of the way we produce animals or produce food from animals. And then the fishing, the health of fish, that did not mention IFAP at all. And this graphic shows us how the articles talked about manure. So we know that there are many public health implications of concentrating manure in small areas. So in terms of the media coverage, almost half did not talk about manure at all. So they're talking about, they mentioned health, they mentioned agriculture, it was focused on the Chesapeake Bay, and almost half did not mention manure at all. Almost a quarter did include manure, but that was the extent of it. They were not specific at all. Almost a quarter said that there's too much manure, but they did not tie it to public health at all. And a lot of people will read that and not know why it's important for them to know that there's too much manure. If you think that it is simply an environmental issue, it's simply about fish kills, it's simply about dead zones, even if it's simply about swimming, which is a public health issue, many, many, many people simply don't care because they don't plan on going swimming in the bay. They don't plan on you know, they don't go out on fishing trips in the bay. They don't care about the dead zone. What we need to do is make sure that people understand the public health impacts. Even if you don't live in the area, hopefully people would care that the air and water of the rural populations in the Chesapeake Bay watershed, if there's industrial food animal production in the area, is a significant public health issue. So that really is the point of the research. So what I found was only 10% of the articles, after I drilled down and already identified the ones that talk about these issues, are most likely to talk about these issues, 10% said that too much manure in a concentrated area is tied to health issues. That's a very small proportion, since it's a purposeful sample. I also conducted stakeholder interviews. The main findings of the stakeholder interviews was that, and I'll go into the stakeholders that I spoke to, the stakeholder groups, public health is not used in efforts to impact these policies, on the policies that are chosen to clean up the bay. And recreation is mentioned most often. As I said, if that's the only health issue that people are talking about, people might read that and think, well, I don't go swimming in the bay, so it doesn't affect me, or it's not that important if people can't go swimming in the bay. So I spoke to a very high-level official in the EPA, and he said, our center point is really rockfish, crabs, oysters, underwater grasses types of pieces versus kids swimming. That is a benefit there, but we haven't talked about that as much. So he's telling me that they're not even focused on the low-hanging fruit of the recreation issue. They're not talking about air quality, water quality in the rural areas at all. And they've been working on cleaning up the bay and reducing pollution for decades, so this is really disappointing. So I also spoke to someone at the Maryland Department of Environment and the Maryland Department of Agriculture, and they focused on advocacy groups' lack of focus on human health and did not talk about their agency's roles in the policy system. So they pretty much were kind of blaming the environmental groups and saying, yes, actually, you're right. People really aren't focused on health. And then they would say, yes, the environmental groups are not focused on health. I spoke to environmental advocates. They said a big reason is because public health professionals are not engaged. This is not seen as a big issue in public health. The schools of public health in the region are not focused on this issue. It's really seen as an environmental issue, and that's very problematic to me because a lot of people, you know, they're not going to make the connection to the environmental problems, but they would hopefully with human health. They also said the EPA fails to connect bay degradation and human health, and that was confirmed. with my conversation with the EPA official. And they said that swimming comes up first, and it's seen by public as an optional activity, as I said before. I spoke to people with the agriculture industry, and these interviews were quite striking, as you can imagine. They were either not aware at all that these are a problem, that there are public health impacts, or they said that it only affects recreation. The quote from someone with the State Farm Bureau said, "I guess when you balance out the economics, I think you're less likely to get people to vote for draconian policies if it's just to benefit a recreational need." So that right there highlights the need for this type of research to try to change the conversation, because that is what the industry is saying, that it's just a recreational need, that's the only human health issue there is, so there's no reason to address it as a human health issue. So it's very obvious what the findings are. Public health is largely excluded from the policy debates on how we should clean up the Chesapeake Bay. This is one set of factors that I identified as part of a larger study. So this was about where I went to school at Johns Hopkins. We have a three-paper option. I don't know if people are familiar with that. So this was one paper in my dissertation. Another paper was more of a political case study to identify other factors that prevent the policies from addressing industrial food animal production and looking at the human health impacts and not just the environmental impacts. So this is one set of factors identified in a larger study that illustrates the reasons why this is not being addressed. The result of people not including human health in part of the conversation is that current and proposed policies do not take health effects into account. So, for example, there are no strategies to reduce the number of animals in the watershed. That would be a very radical policy proposal. But the policies that are being proposed and are being used, there are significant loopholes. They're not being enforced very well. We're using taxpayer money, and they're not very sustainable. So I'll give you some examples. We use taxpayer money in the Chesapeake Bay watershed to transport manure from areas where there's too much manure to areas where there's less animal production. So that's taxpayer money paying for these big trucks that pollute the air, take the manure elsewhere. And if we take care of the manure and we take it elsewhere for the farmers, for the producers, there's no incentive to reduce the number of animals that they're raising. And what happens is if they increase the number of animals that they have on their farm, on their land, that creates more air pollution, like for in those fans that we saw. That's more air pollution coming out into the community, and that settles on the ground, and that results in runoff as well. So even if we take away the waste that would be over-applied on the crops, that's still significant issues. And what I found is that we have many policies where we're using taxpayer money and we are actually encouraging farmers to raise even more animals, and there is no incentive to reduce the number of animals at all. We're also not creating any sort of sustainable change. So, for example, we use taxpayer money for cover crops, which sounds like a great idea, and it is a good idea, but that doesn't create any sort of sustainable change. We have to fund those we pay farmers to plant cover crops every single year. And if we stop paying for it, a vast, vast, vast majority of the farmers will stop planting those cover crops, and then it'll result in increased runoff from the waste that's applied on the fields. So our policies are not addressing the air and water quality issues for rural populations, and actually may encourage farmers to have even more animals on their land. So I concluded that funding is needed to study industrial food animal production, pollution, and public health effects in the Chesapeake Bay watershed. There is a lot of research on the effects in rural communities from CAFOs. But I think that if we had more specific research in this region, people would take it more seriously. Because it was very striking to me that environmental groups are not taking the research from other areas, from other states. It's very applicable. There's not that much difference when you have, you know, thousands and thousands of hogs or cattle or chickens in one area, how it impacts the air and water. but people are not taking the research from other areas and applying it in this area. So I think if there was funding available for people to study it in the area, that it would change the conversation more effectively. Also, if we include public health experts in the policy discussions from the beginning, that's really not happening right now. It's usually the environmental regulators, the agriculture regulators, who are also tasked with promoting agriculture, which is a whole other issue that makes them not the most effective regulators. And there's really no inclusion of public health experts. Environmental groups are included, but as I showed before, they're very narrowly focused themselves. They're focused on the environment issues, the nutrient pollution, and they're not talking about the public health issues. So I would like to thank the study participants, the stakeholders that I interviewed. Also, these are the four professors that oversaw my dissertation work. And the Johns Hopkins Center for a Livable Future funded my dissertation research through a predoctoral fellowship, and I work there full time now. So a big thanks to them as well. You know what? Oh, sure, yes. So you were asking about the incidence of waterborne diseases. It's actually not studied very well. This was something that was very striking to me when I was working on this issue. I searched for studies, so the chicken production in Maryland is concentrated on the eastern shore. It's kind of geographically isolated from the rest of the state. So, and there are universities out there, and I was looking for studies on, on water quality, on the wells, on, different kinds of incidents of whatever diseases could potentially be linked to this issue. And I found one very small study. It was a survey of, I think it was about 60 residents who relied on private well water. The findings were absolutely striking. Half of the wells did not meet water quality requirements for reasons that you would suspect, because they're, because of the nutrient pollution, because of bacterial contamination, exactly. And they very importantly, they also found that people do not regularly test their wells. So these results are very striking, that people are not testing their wells. Their water is not meeting drinking water requirements. And I contacted the person who did the study, and I said, are you doing larger studies? What's the next step? This is very striking. And she said, no, we're not doing any more research on this. And this is at the University of Maryland, which is a land-grant university and has a lot of ties to industrial agriculture. There are some people at the University of Maryland who are doing work on the public health implications of creating food this way. But the vast majority of people there, for political, financial reasons, and also ideological reasons, they don't want to be looking into this issue. So the answer is, I couldn't find anything on that. We don't have data on that. So, the good news is there's a big gap to fill. There's a lot of work to do. I'm ready to go, but it's a huge problem, because I would love to do research where you partner with communities over there. I love that type of research, but there's a huge chasm where people are told by the poultry industry and the Farm Bureau to not trust anyone who's coming to do research about those issues. So we haven't gotten over that hurdle yet. We haven't done that yet. So thank you. It's pie in the sky. Yeah, it's not that feasible, but it's really striking that every single policy option that they're looking at and that they're already trying, it either creates other pollution, it's not a sustainable option, and it really can encourage farmers to have more more animals at their operations. One thing that they're really getting into, and environmental groups actually are really supportive, is poultry waste incineration, which is a huge problem because it creates very significant air pollution. Where is it going to be located? It's not going to be located, near the governor's mansion in Maryland. It's going to be located probably in a disadvantaged area, create serious air pollution. And, birds are given different kinds of drugs. They are given arsenic, which that's supposed to be phasing out, but there are some loopholes in the law that said that they can't use arsenic anymore. So if you're burning something, where it's not just straight animal waste, these animals are given all sorts of drugs and heavy metals, it's a huge concern. And because of the reasons that I showed here, public health experts are not really being included in this conversation. So at the Center for Livable Future, we're trying to get included in the conversation, but a lot of times policymakers, especially if they have environmental groups on board, they're just going to move forward with it, and then we have a whole other problem. No reason to control the number of birds in the area, and a whole new source of air pollution that affects rural communities.
So why
They give birds arsenic because it fights an intestinal disease, or they think that it's not really clear whether it actually fights an intestinal disease. It also gives the meat a pink color. Yeah, it makes the meat pink, but there's a lot of research coming out that's been coming out over several years that the arsenic ends up a little bit in the meat. They haven't found a lot in the meat, but even a little bit of arsenic in your meat is very concerning. They have found it also, obviously, in the waste. A lot of it is not metabolized by the birds, and it just goes into the waste, and then that is in the environment. So a lot of serious problems. Thank you.